welcome to another episode of the People Will Talk podcast. Joining me, as always, is Maria.
Hello.
And our very special guest today, Rebecca Skeets. Rebecca, how are you today?
Hi there. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show today.
And you're originally from New Zealand, aren't you?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Have you been in Madrid for a long time?
Oh yeah, I've been actually 13 years living in Madrid. Yeah, so we are quite at home here now.
So yeah. Rebecca, you've been so kind to come and share with us today your experience and your knowledge about INED. For those who are not familiar with the condition, could you describe it to us, please?
Yeah, sure. Well, INED stands for infantile neuroaxonal dystrophy. Okay, this is a ultra rare genetic disease. The best way to understand INED would be to compare it to forms of Parkinson's and Alzheimer's that is super fast acting and affects very young children. There's actually a genetic link to both of these diseases, and INED shares that link. The first signs of the disease can be seen anytime between 6 and 18 months, where children generally are diagnosed around 2 to 3 years old. The average life expectancy for this disease is sadly between 5 to 10 years old. And once INED is diagnosed, it's generally when the disease starts to progress quite rapidly. Children start to lose their skills that they've previously acquired, like walking and talking, feeding themselves and interacting. And most children end up completely dependent, hardly able to move, and fed via gastric tubes with assistance in breathing. So yeah, that's kind of a little bit about what INED is, and yeah.
Okay.
Thank you so much for explaining that to us. So can you tell us a little bit about your personal experience with INED?
Yeah, I'd really like to share that. So our son Nico is now 7, but he was born a beautiful, normal baby boy. He was super smiley and chatty and everything was going great till about 9 months old when we noticed that things weren't progressing the normal way, I suppose. He wasn't reaching his normal milestones that the doctors would ask you the questions: can he do this, can he reach, can he pass things between what from one hand to the other. He could do it, but he could only do it kind of on a one-off occasion. He'd do it and then he would kind of forget how to do the skill that he learnt. So whether it was passing from hand to hand or crawling, he started to crawl and move around and it was so amazing to watch him, but he never got to really fully crawling. He would go on his elbows, kind of commando style. And I think the one thing that really stood out was his muscle tone. He never could, hold on tight to anything. It was a very weak grasp. So all these things, obviously, you start putting them together and getting worried and looking for answers, I suppose. And that in itself was quite a long time. So it was about 18 months that we started going to doctors and being taken seriously for the worries that we have. It's not just he's going slow or he'll get there in the end. It was now, he's 18 months and these things aren't happening. So that's when we started with the hospital visits and tests and it was a long process, where we finally got onto a well, we got onto the waiting list at the Niño Jesus Hospital, the children's hospital here in Madrid, who are wonderful, but they have enormous waiting lists. And we got to see the neurologist there. And they were, by that time, really alarmed with Nico's condition at that point. And he was very quickly then admitted for testing and many more things. And the big, I suppose, the big test that they did was the genetic testing. And that's when Nico finally was diagnosed. We got his diagnosis in February of 2019, just before his third birthday. And yeah, it was a day. It was a big day for us, and not a good day. Yeah, for me, it was like a little bit of relief to get a diagnosis, to put a name to finally what was going on with him, because you could just imagine so many different things happening. But it was just really a really horrible experience going there to find out that your child has INAD, and we had no idea what that was. It was just such a foreign word. So the doctor then, she told us the name of the disease, and she explained to us both, Carlos and I, we carry a mutation in the PLA2G6 gene that Nico has inherited from us. And you hear that and you have no idea, honestly, no idea what she's talking about in that moment in time. It was just surreal. And to be honest, she wasn't able to share any more information with us. It was just like, yeah, this is what Nico has, this is the name, and there's no cure and no treatment for this disease. She knew that much. And then she told us to get in touch with the palliative care team. And it was like, what are you talking about? Like, we've got a healthy, beautiful little boy here. So what do we, it just made no sense in that moment. For me, that was like, well, shit, excuse me. That was something really serious. And that was kind of it. We walked out of there and Carlos, being super daddy that he is, quickly jumped on the internet and tried to make sense of what INAD is, because they couldn't really put light on anything more. They couldn't tell us anything more. So, yeah, Carlos was amazing. I was just in shock. And in fact, there are days that I think I still am. But he very quickly researched into INAD. He got in touch with INAD Cure Foundation in America, who put us quickly in touch with the families group on Facebook, who have been amazing. And we have learned so much from the families and what they're going through and how it works and what to expect. And through INAD Cure, we found that there was a drug trial happening right at that time, actually, through a drug company called Retrotope. And it was, the trial was happening outside, or coming out of San Francisco and New York. And Carlos was able to get Nico on. He worked so hard and so fast, and he got Nico on this trial. And it was just, for us, a bit of a big bit of light at the end of a little dark tunnel there. And it was, at that time, it was the only hope that we had. So we wanted to do everything within our hands to try to help our boy. But so we went to San Francisco. We spent, I think it was 4 or 5 weeks, 4 weeks the first time we went there, doing testing and getting Nicole set up with the medication and then bringing it back to Europe and all the process of that. And that was, it was wonderful to have some hope and something to hold on to and see if this was going to work for Nico. But sadly, after 2 years of taking the drug, Nico's condition had progressed pretty rapidly. When he was diagnosed, he could still sit up, he could hold on to toys, he could take a spoon to his mouth and chew solid food. He could swallow liquids and roll from one side to the other. He couldn't roll right over. He'd lost already quite a few of those abilities. But he could no longer. So 2 years later, all of these things were gone. And now he can barely hold his head up when he's in his chair. He now has a feeding tube. Which he got fitted at age 5. I mean, he receives all his food and nutrition and water through that. And he's on oxygen on and off now during the day and most nights. So, yeah, it's absolutely heartbreaking to see how this disease is slowly taking our boy from us. That's our experience so far of what INAD is. I was going to say, we set up INAD Cure Spain mainly to join forces with INAD Cure America, because we found that when we went public with our story a few years ago now, and we made a video sharing our story that people could understand what's going on for us and raise awareness for INAD Cure. And it went viral here in Spain. And we had many, many, many people wanting to donate, but they found it really difficult to, well, for the Spanish, it was quite difficult to do that through a website that was all in English. At the time, it was crowdfunding. And so setting up INAD Cure, the association INAD Cure Spain, was to make that process a little bit easier for local communities to get involved as well. So we now have that set up. And since we set it up, actually, well, sadly, there's been two other little boys here in Spain who have been diagnosed with INAD, but their families have got on board with us and are part of our team, which is wonderful. And they're working really hard to raise awareness and as much funds as they can to fund a gene therapy trial, which is a new hope that we have that INAD Cure are funding, hopefully by the end of 2023, a campaign that's called One Gene, One Dream. So there is definitely some light there at the end of the tunnel. If we can get to that trial.
So Rebecca, the work that you are describing for INAD Cure is so important. And you know, you've just told us about this new campaign, but you've also very generously shared with us your experience, and you know, you've told us about how difficult it was because you didn't have the information. you know, and we imagine this is one of the hardest things at the beginning. You don't know where to start. How does iNaCure can help, you know, parents in this situation? You know, when they find out about when the kids are diagnosed.
Yeah, iNaCure Foundation America are a massive support for all the families, extended families too, but generally for parents, I think it's your first go-to of when you're diagnosed, because there is not a lot of information out there. So Lena Panwala is the founder of iNaCure Foundation, and she very kindly reaches out, well, whoever reaches out to her, she puts them in contact with all the other families and gives all the information that she has in her power, and shares that with everybody. So it's the first source of real information, I think, for many families when they have their diagnosis.
And for people listening, because I know, of course, you're here on the podcast, and I know you've been in other places talking about this as well. For the ordinary person who's not involved in these organizations through direct experiences, what's the best way for them to get involved and help out?
Well, so with this new campaign that we have, the One Gene, One Dream campaign, we have a goal of $7 million, basically, that we need to raise by the end of 2023. So it's quite a big ask and a massive goal to reach. And it sounds like a lot, but when you break it down, that means if we had 1 million people donate $7, or 7 euros in our case, we would reach that goal pretty quickly. In Spain here, we have a campaign that's called Sumate Sumasete. Okay, and that's so far doing really, really well. And with a huge amount of help from the other families, Adrian and Alejandro's families and their local communities, the campaign has already reached 200,000 euros. But we still have a long way to go to reach this goal. So ways to get involved are, being one in a million, for one, be one of our million and make a donation of €7, $7, whatever you choose. But also setting up any type of fundraising event, spreading the word, sharing things on our social media sites, iNaCure Spain, whatever ideas you have, we're open to listening and looking at ways that we can get the story out there as far and wide as we can, really.
Thank you so much for telling us about those ideas. It's easy enough to to share and the information and to help, really. The association has featured in the media to an extent, but we are just interested in, is it easy to get media to cover it? And, it's a topic that, it's a delicate topic, is it easy to get them to handle the information correctly, to to inform properly, or how do you feel about that?
It's been interesting. The coverage we've had was either through people seeing our story, or through contacts, family contacts and things. And it's been amazing. It's true that sometimes it depends on what else is going on in the world at the time, that your story can be either cut short or only a portion of what you'd like to share with of is really put out there. But generally, it's been a massive help having our story covered by the media. It's not easy to get it done, but it has happened, and we've been very lucky to have that coverage so far. And I'm sure I hope there'll be more to come.
So, Rebecca, we'll put links in to the organizations you've been speaking about in the description of this podcast. So hopefully people can get more awareness and get involved as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like also just to thank you very much for being here and telling us this story and sharing it with us. And we both really appreciate it. And myself and Maria, we wish you the very best with this journey. And I hope you raise the money that you want and you start having better news in the future.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Thanks for listening.